I am so excited to announce that I have released the first official tarot diagnosis spread book. Tarot and Self-Discovery is a therapeutic tarot journey with over 200 spreads, including over 152 card prompts and over 50 robust tarot spreads. You can purchase a physical copy on Amazon or a digital copy at thetarotdiagnosis.com. You are listening to The Tarot Diagnosis. I'm your host, Shannon. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and I also happen to have a love for tarot. Each episode, I invite you to reflect with me as I work to demystify the tarot and the human experience, all while exploring tarot's connection to mental and emotional health. While this podcast may feel therapeutic, it is not meant to take the place of psychotherapy. So grab your cards and join me as I work to create a pathway to better understand ourselves and those around us. We're getting deep today, maybe even a little dark, depending on how you feel about the topic of death and dying and existentialism. I've spent a lot of time reflecting on death and talking about death, especially lately with clients, friends, lovers. It seems to be such a prevalent topic in my life and in the life of the people around me over the last several years. I've been thinking about what death means to me, what it means to my clients, and just what it means about life in general. And throughout the last several years of reflecting on this inevitable experience we will all have, I've realized that my own fear of death hasn't ever been about the actual act of dying. It's more about what won't be or what hasn't been. It's really the ultimate FOMO, fear of missing out on living, missing out on life, missing out on experiences, just FOMO. Growing up, I used to have this really strong superstition that if I spoke about death, then it would happen. It's kind of like in Practical Magic when the Death Watch beetle starts chirping and Sandra Bullock's character just starts frantically pulling up all the floorboards, trying to catch the beetle in hopes that death doesn't come. She's so desperate to reach this beetle before it can do any harm. And I think that level of desperation speaks so deeply to our innate human fear of death and dying. The majority of us will do anything to avoid it. We'll do anything even just to avoid thinking about it. I feel like people unfamiliar with tarot have that same frantic experience if they're getting a reading and the death card shows up because they're unfamiliar. It's like, no, put that back in the deck. I don't want to see that. And it's just because of the word death and even the imagery that alludes to or depicts death. When I was younger, I very much used to be like that at any mention of death. Oh, it would cause me so much anxiety. But now, not so much. And I think part of that is just growth and wisdom, getting older. But I also wonder if that's because I feel like I've been able to do and see and experience a lot in the last couple decades. Because for the longest time, the fear of death really came from that fear of not having done enough. I read something a while back that has always stuck with me. And it was talking about therapy and grief. And what I read was something along the lines of how all modern day forms of psychotherapy are really just a form of bereavement counseling. And it's so true. We are constantly holding space for people who are grieving in some capacity, but not necessarily in the traditional sense of grieving as if they've like actually lost a loved one. We're often grieving a loss of meaning. We saw this so much during quarantine. It seemed like the population was really split into two different categories. Those who felt like isolation led to a loss of meaning, and those who felt like isolation gave them space to find meaning. It was really the ultimate Five of Cups experience. Half of us were like, oh my God, everything is gone and ruined and empty, and we're grieving the loss of life as we knew it. And then the other half were like, oh my God, I get to just focus on these two remaining cups that, you know, I've been neglecting. And I'm so glad that life as I knew it is so different now, because I feel like I'm able to find or discover meaning now. In reflecting on this type of transient nature of life, I find myself really thinking about the Hanged Man a lot. You know, within the imagery of the Hanged Man, this figure is suspended upside down, and we are all often suspended between fear, the fear of death, and also us trying to search for deeper meaning in our human existence. And it's within these suspended moments that we have a choice to make. And I think sometimes it's the choice that is the most destabilizing, not necessarily the act of hanging upside down and having to exist between that space of fear of death and needing to search for deeper meaning in our aliveness. Speaking of the transient nature of life, Sigmund Freud wrote about the idea of existentialism and death, and it's actually called On Transience. In Freud's essay, he talks about walking along the countryside with a very famous poet at the time, and Freud is just enamored with the scenery, and he's so happy to be experiencing it the way it is in that exact moment, in that exact time. Freud is essentially having the ultimate awe experience. And that awe experience is a really important component of good mental health. It helps decrease anxiety, helps decrease depression, makes us feel very connected to the earth and nature in general. But during this experience, the poet begins to sob. And he's not crying happy tears. He's genuinely experiencing despair, because intellectually he could respect that what Freud was experiencing was real and true, and he could acknowledge the beauty of the countryside, but he was unable to experience the joy in the way that Freud was, because he knew that it would all eventually die someday. I feel like this is such an accurate depiction of how many of us experience life and death and the way the world exists around us. I feel like we're either mostly Freud in this situation, or mostly the poet. And the goal here, though, is to find hopefully some sort of middle ground, much like everything about life, finding that gray area. In this case, I almost want to refer to it as fluidity, being able to exist on this spectrum in between Freud's experience and the poet's experience, and give us permission to sometimes be in that awe state and also acknowledge the pain of suffering and death. Freud eventually argued that the transitory nature of life doesn't lessen life's inherent value. And I think that concept is where a lot of us can get stuck on this spectrum, because I think many of us might say, well, it does decrease its value, whereas others might say, no, it actually increases its value. Essentially, Freud's anecdote about the poet and the countryside was poignant because it really reflects the dichotomy many of us face between embracing the fleeting beauty and opportunity that exists in life, and also grappling with the inevitability of our demise and the demise of the life around us. And this brings me back to the concept of fluidity. If we are only existing in one or the other, embracing the fleeting beauty or grappling with the inevitability of its end, we're either going to be delusional or depressed. And some might argue I'd rather be delusional. But I think the goal here is to figure out, how do we oscillate between embracing life's transient joys while also acknowledging that sense of impermanence, so we're not consumed by existential dread. I feel like now's a good time to pull a card. So let's shuffle and pull a card. And I would love for you to pull a card alongside me. Reach out and let me know what you end up pulling. It's always fun to hear what you all pull alongside me. So I, of course, am using Tarot Vintage, as I do. I love this deck so much. It's just, it's my favorite deck of all time. I'll be so sad when it starts to disintegrate. I don't think it will for a long time, though. It's still been a couple of years now, and it's still in pretty good shape. Also, not a sponsored ad for Tarot Vintage. I get zero kickback from anything. I just love the deck so much. All right. Oh, interesting. Ooh, okay. This will be fun to talk about through the lens of existential dread. So I got the Two of Wands. I think the Two of Wands. Okay. Yeah. How do I want to do this? I always think of the Two of Wands so positively. It's one of my favorite cards. But I think, okay, but there's two here, and two is all about balance and dichotomy. So let's go that direction. So if we're looking at the Two of Wands through the lens of existentialism, we could say that the Two of Wands actually encourages us to confront the impermanence of life while still acknowledging that we are allowed to have dreams and goals and pursue those dreams and goals. I think this imagery shows that, yes, life and existence can be fleeting, but that doesn't mean that we have to succumb to the fleeting. You know, like Freud's argument about the inherent value of life, despite its transitory nature, the Two of Wands reminds us that our aspirations and our eventual endeavors still hold significance, even in the face of impermanence. One does not cancel out the other. I think this card also encourages us to find balance, you know, by planning and pursuing our visions. That's where we truly find those feelings of joy and meaning and fulfillment that we need while we are alive on this earth in this present moment. Because without it, life is meaningless and we don't have joy. And then we're essentially giving up the opportunity to truly experience this human life we've been given. There, between the Two of Wands and the Hanged Man I spoke about earlier, I feel like there's kind of like an underlying theme of control over our lives here. And, you know, I struggle with this idea that we're not supposed to have total control over our lives and whether or not we live or die or find meaning or succumb to existential dread, because, you know, as a therapist, I have this obligation to keep people alive and this ethical guideline to follow specific protocol. Whereas, like, if you present as a danger to yourself, I have to do something about that. And, you know, I've done a lot of work with clients who are in the thick of major depression. I've had to talk more people off a cliff than I can count. And there's always that internal plea that I experience where I just keep saying over and over inside internally, just stay alive, please. But they don't want to, because for them, death sounds so much better than life, at least life as it is for them in those moments of major depression. And there's a difference between simply existing and actually living. So many of us dread that feeling of just existing. And then when coupled with depression, death does seem like the better option. And throughout this experience with clients, I found one of the most helpful interventions in these cases is to just focus on one thing to look forward to at a time. It could be a movie that you committed to seeing with a friend next week, or your nephew's birthday next month, or a band who's coming to town in the fall that you've wanted to see since you were a teen. As therapists, we often find ourselves at the intersection of life and death, navigating this delicate balance between necessary interventions and also acceptance. And it's a profound responsibility to guide individuals through some of their darkest moments and help them find some glimmer of hope amidst despair. And yet, we're reminded time and again that true fulfillment must be cultivated from within ourselves. So here I am trying to guide, but at the same time, knowing that I cannot provide them meaning and joy, they have to find that. So it's kind of within this experience of being a therapist and also talking about existential dread that, you know, I often think about the Eight of Swords, especially in terms of the perceived lack of control over one's life and circumstances, because, you know, sometimes I think What if those sores and the binding around the figure in this card isn't self-imposed? We tend to always view the Eight of Swords as, you know, this self-jailing card. And, you know, I just don't think it's always the case. And maybe this is a totally different discussion. Maybe I'm getting off track. This might be a different discussion on privilege and existentialism. That's maybe a completely different episode. But I guess I just, at least that's where my brain was going. I at least wanted to reflect on that, because in the midst of depression and existential thoughts, there are so many things that are inside of our control and also many things that are outside of our control that contribute to the way that we feel. All right, I think we should pull another card. Okay, Nine of Cups. So this makes me think of fulfillment and how searching for meaning for many of us, we liken to being fulfilled, and that to live is to be fulfilled, or to truly live is to continue searching for fulfillment. I mean, think about how many times we ask ourselves or others, what do I need in order to have a fulfilling life? What we're really asking is, what do I need in order to avoid the emptiness and meaninglessness of life? Which, you know, in our ability to distract ourselves from this idea, we inevitably create our own version of meaning, which to me is our whole purpose as humans. And this is similar to the philosopher Sartre's belief that it was our responsibility to create our own meaning. I kind of want to pull another card. Let's just keep pulling, see what happens. More cups. Ooh, this time Seven of Cups. Okay. So, Seven of Cups. Seven and Nine of Cups. There's a lot happening with the Seven of Cups. So there's a lot of overwhelm. And actually, this is pretty fitting for this discussion, because we exist in a world that is just overflowing with stimuli and options and responsibilities and obligations. And it's so easy to lose ourselves inside all of that stimuli and lose our ability to truly search for meaning. To go back to Sartre, he wrote that true fulfillment lies not in the pursuit of external validation or purpose, but in the act of creating our own meaning. And it's interesting looking at the Seven of Cups, because it almost looks like a menu. And this person's kind of, you know, wondering, oh, what do I want from this menu of life, so to speak? And it makes me think about how we often put ourselves in positions where we're supposed to find meaning or search for meaning based on what we think we should be doing, or what we think we should be wanting, or what we think should be giving us purpose and meaning. Actually, this is why my brain's going in this direction. So I've actually been working on a workshop for members of the symposium on the concept of tarot and social psychology. And I found myself reflecting on how much we as individuals are highly influenced by groups, society, social media, our friends, our family, you know, the list goes on. And this influence often stops us from truly seeking meaning in activities or experience that would bring us joy, because we fear judgment, or we fear doing something that others aren't doing, which from an evolutionary standpoint makes sense. In order to survive, back in the day, we needed to conform to group norms, and to step outside of a group norm could literally be a death sentence. And if we're trying to stay alive, we need to follow the norms and the customs of the group. But we're no longer just living to survive. We're actually at this point in evolution where we are desperate to thrive. And many of us, especially those of us with privilege, do have the opportunity to thrive, but we're often terrified to take the leap because we don't want to be outcasted. And then the unknown of the outcome if we do take the leap is too anxiety-provoking to continue. Something I tell clients all the time is, nothing is going to just fall into your lap. If you want something, you have to go get it. You have to make things happen. The more we sit and wait and feel angry about the meaninglessness of life, or how we might not have control over things, the more meaningless our life ends up becoming. So as someone who can be a little too Queen of Swords sometimes, I understand that this can come across as cold and that we still need to acknowledge that having that level of responsibility is not without a sense of anxiety. And it's also riddled with a sense of privilege, as I spoke about earlier, which I think is a whole other podcast discussion that maybe I'll dive into soon. Because the truth is, for many of us, we can only create a certain type of being based on so many underlying issues and circumstances that are either inside or outside of our control. Someone I often think about when I'm either discussing existentialism or the concept of death is Dr. Irvin Yalom, who's a Stanford psychiatrist. And Dr. Yalom talks about the idea of death and anxiety across the lifespan. And it's interesting because even though it's difficult, I think talking about the death of others is easier than talking about our own eventual death. And, you know, Yalom takes a really interesting approach to this idea. I think it's similar to Erik Erikson's stages of development. And the way he talks about it makes it a little bit more palatable, I feel like. So Yalom believed that clinicians actually don't focus enough on the idea of death and existentialism and death anxiety, which I totally agree with. And he believes by neglecting this, we're actually neglecting the ability to create more meaning in our lives. And this kind of makes me, my brain's kind of all over the place thinking about different folks and schools of thought. And so now my brain's kind of headed in the direction of Buddhism and how we become overwhelmed, you know, when we're thinking about creating meaning in our life and how we can get overwhelmed with the experience of suffering as humans. And the main principle of Buddhism is that existence is suffering. There's also this guilt that exists within many of us where if we aren't focusing on the suffering of the world, then we naturally become passive perpetrators of the suffering. In Buddhism, desire and ignorance are what lie at the root of suffering, which can and should be interpreted like in every facet. So by only focusing on the suffering that exists, are we just creating more suffering though? How do we create meaning alongside the suffering? That's kind of the ultimate Buddhist question. Or if we turn and look at what's being done to eliminate suffering, then maybe we can feel a sense of hope, which gives us the motivation to play an active role in ending suffering instead of just being paralyzed by it, which then maybe we would be more motivated to find meaning. And I wonder how much this is tied into this idea where a minute ago where I was talking about Dr. Yalom and how it's easier to talk about the death or the suffering of others than sometimes it's easier to talk about the death or suffering of ourselves. And even reflecting on that, I wonder, is that a form of avoidance because it's easier to think about or talk about the death or suffering of others? When we're doing so, we're avoiding our own mortality, which I just now had a personal thought saying that. So when I think about my own eventual death, I actually find a lot of irony in trying to practice this whole being okay with non-existence because my wish is to be buried and planted as a tree so that I can help create and sustain life even after my death. So that's worth exploring on my own, I suppose, because even within my dying wish, I am trying to escape a sense of meaninglessness. I am still very much trying to live, even in my death. Thank you so much for listening to The Tarot Diagnosis. For more tarot and mental health content, follow The Tarot Diagnosis on Instagram. You can also subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode and sign up to receive The Tarot Diagnosis emails where you'll have access to exclusive spreads and exciting announcements. To join an incredible community of tarot and psychology enthusiasts, join the Tarot Diagnosis membership community, The Symposium, by visiting thetarotdiagnosis.com.